Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And we're back live again. We're not traveling now for a while. I think we had enough. We got home right before Christmas, and that was enough. Stay home for a while. Tonight is January the 17th in the year 2014. I'm still in the old year. 2014. And so I don't know where the year went, but here we are in a new year. Okay, and we've got a guest tonight, and she's one of our new authors, and we're going to be talking about her new book.
Right.
But if this tonight's going to be about UFOs. You're there, aren't you, Sherry?
I am. I'm here. Yes.
Okay, but if anyone wants to call in, I'm going to give out the toll-free number. And let's try to stick to the subject.
Yeah, we'll keep with Sherry's information.
Yeah, instead of going off on the little rabbit trails.
Right.
Okay, the toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. 1-888-627-6008. Okay, and Sherry, I saw in your email that you just got back from Sedona.
I was in Sedona last week, and from there went down to Tucson, and now I'm in Austin, Texas, but spent about 5 days in Sedona. Just loved it.
I was wondering, what did you think of it?
Oh, I've been there before, and I really, really am drawn to it. I wouldn't mind making that my permanent home.
Yeah, we have been there many times, but the energy there is, a lot of people can't handle that energy. And they don't want to stay in it all the time.
No, I enjoyed it. I find the energy in Tucson to be almost even more so. And somebody once said that was because they store all those crystals for the gem show are stored around Tucson. But I know it's a different kind of energy in Tucson than in Sedona. But I just loved Sedona. I feel very much at home there.
Yeah. I do too.
Yeah.
You know, Sedona was the Indian sacred place, and white man was never supposed to even be there at all.
Is that right?
Yeah, they were never supposed to live there because no one lived there. It was just the Indians went and had their ceremonies, and it was sacred because they knew the energy.
Right. Wasn't there a tribe that lived there that suddenly just disappeared? Suddenly they were gone?
I haven't heard that because I heard that no one lived there. They just went there for special things.
Maybe that's why nobody lived. Maybe it was long ago.
Well, the energy is strong.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that they didn't the tribe go into the next dimension is what the theory. But maybe I've got the wrong place. I don't know.
Well, in one of my books, I talk about a tribe that did that, but I don't remember where they said they were.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Trying to connect the dots on it.
I have a caller, but can you more introduce Sherry before we go to the caller?
Okay. If the caller, just stay on the line for a minute. Is that okay?
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Well, Sherry Wild is our guest tonight, and she's one of our new authors, and she's written a book called The Forgotten Promise, and it's about her lifelong experience with UFOs. And she's going to tell how she worked her way through it. Because, Sherry, you said in the beginning you had all of the fears and everything that everybody goes through.
Oh, yes, yes.
But then you finally worked your way to where now you realize it's not nothing to be afraid of.
Right, right. When you first, you know, it's like peeling away layers of an onion, the experience, because the early years of my life I had encounters and I didn't really know what was going on. You would have partial memories, but the blocking was so good. They really blocked me quite well. So, and most of my encounters were daytime. So they did everything they could to keep it from being fearful, but I still had strange memories, couldn't connect the dots on what was happening to me. And then as I got older, I had friends who were witness to some of my encounters. And still the odd things, I never thought it was alien abductions, which I don't like to call it that, but until the late 1980s, when there was so much activity And it was just time for me to awaken. I really believe that my life was programmed and planned. So in the late 1980s, I came into awareness of what was happening with me, and my initial reaction was one of just fear, total, complete fear. I was scared out of my mind.
A human reaction, because we are human.
Yes, and I still, to this day, I mean, my encounters continue to this day, and I notice that my body still gets fearful. If I know that they're there and going to be there, if I don't have time to get myself settled into a clear state, a clear state of presence, and feel that connection to my source, I can still respond with fear to them. So it's a strange thing. We're multi-layered. You know, we have different bodies. You know, you have your mental body, your emotional body, and all the different bodies. And I think it's probably my mental body and my physical body that respond with fear.
Yeah, that's the human part. Even though we realize it, I have a lot of people say, oh, I want to meet them, I won't be afraid, but they don't realize that's that human part of us that you have no control over.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Where it goes back to the animal part, as Julia just said. But, a lot of what you were, and that's why I wanted to publish the book, because it goes along so well with all the things that I've discovered. Because it does start out with fear, and there's too many people out there talking about the negative part, not realizing it's only the way they view it.
Right, right. As soon as I overcame the fear, I mean, I spent a long time believing that I was the ultimate victim. I was absolutely certain that there was hardly anything worse than this, because I couldn't hide from them, I couldn't keep my children safe from them. It was just an ongoing thing, and sometimes they were 2, 3, 4 times a week coming into my life, and it was so disruptive to my life, and I really felt like a victim. But there was a part of me that didn't accept that. There was a part of me that kept saying, "But where's God in all this? And how can this? You know, how can this be that I can be a victim? Something about this." And there was just a part of me that. We're multidimensional beings, and so there was a part of me all along that had an understanding of what this was about, and I just kept looking for the answers, and it was, like I say, my life was programmed, it was planned this way. I was meant to come into the awareness of the truth of what this was all about, and I came to the understanding that I had volunteered, that I came here for this purpose. Right at the same time and I got validation of that, as soon as I came into that remembering, then I came across your video, Dolores, on the internet. Yeah, and it validated it. It was like saying, yep, that's exactly right, because I was like, well, that can't be. I'm making
that
up, you know. Yeah.
But, you know, you were talking about you don't like the term abduction. They don't like it either.
No.
But, you know, I've been doing the investigating for over 25 years. They prefer to call it visitations.
Oh, okay. I call it encounters, yeah.
Yeah, encounters is a good word, too.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
We ought to take the caller now. Is she the one that's still on the line?
Yeah, we can see what...
See what that is. I just wanted to give a background first. Are you still there, caller?
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead. What's your name?
Okay, hi. My name is Sabina, and I'm calling from Northern Virginia. And I wanted to call in and thank you, Dolores and Julia, for the work that you do in bringing these subjects to the public and helping us all understand why we are changing and how we are changing and all of that. But since you're talking about UFOs today, I had a question. Do any of you know if the comet Eisen... is a comet, if it's still out there, and if there are really spaceship attached to it or flying alongside of it? Do you have any information about that?
I'd like to hear what Sherry might know, because we really haven't had much information on that.
But I will tell you, though, this has been for years, they've been talking about comets, and when the comets come, there's supposed to be spaceships in them. It's something that's repeated constantly, and it's never had any verification at all.
Right, we haven't gotten anything, so that's why I don't know. Sherry, have you heard anything, or do you know anything on that?
I don't. I think that the little bit that I know about it and I agree, there's been all this, there's been a lot of fear mongering about comets and all kinds of things, and stories about them. What resonated the strongest with me in regard to the information on this one was what Patricia Cota-Robles had said about that she put out a posting on it, and I'm not going to try to restate it here because I'm not sure I would get the facts correct, but she said that it was programmed to come along at this time, that it was created along the same time that our solar system or universe was created. I'm not sure which or if it matters, but that this was programmed to come through at this time to bring back with it the energy to help us with the awakening process. And I think a large portion of it has gone withdrawn into the sun, and all that's continuing on are small fragments of it now. And this is my understanding, and it is based on what Patricia Cota-Robles has said. And I trust in her information a lot. I think that she has contact with some pretty high vibrational entities. She calls it the, I can't even think of what she calls it now, lesions of light or something like that. And so I think her information is probably as accurate as anyone's.
Well, yeah, it's a good response.
It is. Mm-hmm. But, you know, the first time I heard this years ago, they were talking about this comet coming around and there was supposed to be spacecraft in the tail of it. And I said, I don't think any E.T. with any sense is going to ride a spaceship in the tail of a comet because it would be pretty bumpy.
Right. I mean, it's funny the stories, you know, because that's not how it works. I mean, I think you have a clear understanding of it. The E.T.'s, you know, they're interdimensional, and they don't, it doesn't work like that, you know?
I know.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't need to do that.
But right. That's where they try to make the fear.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right, I know, but everything I heard was really positive about it, and I heard that they're doing it in order to get more people's attention that are ready to, you know, to deal with this, that they are out there, there's life out there. And that the chances of NASA and the government covering it up would be lower if we could all see it up there in the sky. And that they would be doing positive things for the planet. I even read something about crystals being deposited on the planet to help us raise the energy or the vibration. And I heard good things about it. I just haven't seen it in the sky. And it seems there are no pictures of it. So I was just wondering, since you guys have a connection to different sources, if you had heard anything.
Because, you know, in my work, I've never, ever, in all 26 years, found a negative experience. Wow. It's all in the viewpoint.
It's all
I know. This is why I believe it. Where we live in Arkansas, too, we live on top of a huge crystal deposit here. So the crystals are having a big effect right now. Is there something to do with all that?
My thought, as you were saying that, Vina, is those things are going to happen anyway. They don't. I think somewhere it's gotten merged with this comet, and I don't think that. Boy, and that's coming from that something's gotten mixed up here. You have the comet event. And then you have the ETs, whatever, they're going to start being more visible. They're depositing crystals. They're doing things to help the Earth. They're doing things. They're two separate things. My fiber is saying these two have gotten mingled, and that's not necessarily the case.
Okay. All right.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much. Oh, and Julia, I'm going to buy your book, Soul Speak. I can't wait.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Okay. All right, and thanks for calling in.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay. But Sherry, see, that's the thing I've been up against since I first started the investigations way back in the 1980s, was all the investigators had the idea it was negative, and people were being harmed, and they didn't believe what I was finding, and they didn't like it because it was disputing what they were finding.
Yeah.
That's why I liked your book so much, is it goes along exactly with what I've been uncovering.
You know, that's interesting, Dolores, because what I'm finding, I'm being invited to speak at different venues and that, but the hardcore groups that are really into the UFO investigation aspects, what I call the nuts and bolts of the UFOs.
Yeah.
We know who you're talking about.
I know.
Yeah.
We know exactly.
Yeah. they don't necessarily want to hear what I have to say because it doesn't have fear in it. It doesn't have.
I know.
Because I've moved past the fear, and they call it airy fairy, and they don't want to hear that airy fairy stuff
They've been calling me that for 30 years. They just tried to discredit everything I've done.
Yeah. I think that it's the human condition. You know, when you look at humanity's story here on the planet, they fell so far into fear, and now they're coming back, and they're being ushered back into the light. And I think that it's just humanity's way of being, that they project that fear out. And if it doesn't have fear around it, it can't possibly be real. They can't even imagine something being positive. So. It's a strange
thing. I had one
thing.
Man at one conference we were at. I don't even know how we got into this. We happened to be in the vendor area, and he came up to me and he was talking to me about how, did we choose, like if you're having encounters, did you choose that? And I said, yeah, it's all chosen. It's a contract. I didn't sign any contract, and he got really upset. And if that's the case, why is everybody so afraid? If they signed a contract, they wouldn't be afraid, you know, if they agreed to, you know.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I was explaining to him, it's fear is a natural thing, but, oh, that was his reason. That they must be doing something bad for you to be so afraid.
Yeah, yeah, I know it. I've had people argue with me, too, and walk out of my talk because they stand up and they want to argue with me about it. And they insist that I've been the Stockholm Syndrome and I've been brainwashed
brainwashed.
Kinds of other things. Yeah, and you know, if they read my book, they'll see that, you know, I certainly struggled against all of this. You know, I mean, I went to several psychiatrists. I wanted to be found insane. You know, that was easier for me to deal with that than to believe that I was being abducted by aliens. I mean, I went through the whole gamut. But I'm a very rational person. It's just in my nature to be that way. So. I can understand people being that way to a certain level, but at some point you have to open your mind just a little bit more and start to allow some light in a little bit, you know. So it's been interesting.
That's what a lot of these and other investigators at the UFO conferences say, I'm not finding the truth because I'm not finding the evil and the horror. And I said, that's because it does not exist.
Right.
But
right.
They can't, you know, they have their own viewpoint, and I respect that. I respect their research, but I've been doing it long enough. I think if there was anything there, I would have found it by now.
Well, I think it's a matter of opening your vision, your view, opening it up to a broader perspective.
Do you think that if there's some of the negative might be what are called the MILADs, the military abductions, that might be perpetrated to kind of keep the fear going? There might be some of that going
on. In the UFO community, we have what we call disinformation and misinformation that the government is deliberately putting out there to make them appear to be the bad guys.
Right, because so far you haven't come across any of these military abductions.
No, I haven't.
But we have definitely come across people dispelling misinformation.
Yeah, we know a lot of them that do that.
Right.
And a lot of times, you know, I've done it long enough, I know if it doesn't sound right, to me that's the government is planting a story.
Right, exactly.
And they're clever. It's done very cleverly.
I know it. And I know that even my own experiences, some of them can seem on the surface to be very cold. People have asked me, they say, well, you talk about the bruises. And you talk, you know, they left bruises on you, and they drop you off in the wrong place in the middle of the night in the freezing cold. And I say, yeah, they do that. But, you know, everything was programmed and planned, and I believe that some of that was about, I believe those are like leaving little breadcrumbs or markers along the way so that when the time came for me to awaken, because I don't think they left anything to chance. Everything was programmed right to the smallest detail. And I believe that those were like little markers so that I would remember those encounters. And you know, no harm came to me ever. I mean, you know, so finger bruises on my arms and injection sites and all the other things. Plus, a lot of it had to do with keeping my body healthy. So, you know, there was always a reason for behind what happened. On the surface, it's a lot like the analogy that's always used is the child going to the doctor and the doctor having to give a shot to the child. It hurts. And
yeah.
The child doesn't understand, and that's a lot like what we have. And through your fear, you filter it through your fear, and your perception is tainted by that layer of fear that you have. So,
yeah, see, this is what I've written about in many of my books, too, that what they're doing is checking just to make sure we're healthy.
Right.
They're keeping you healthy, and that's all it is. And sometimes mm-hmm. they use machines that make marks, mm-hmm. and they said the marks go away, so they haven't done any mm-hmm. harm.
Right.
Well, you know, at the conference, by the way, we are having our UFO conference. It's the 27th year, and it's in Eureka Springs in April. And Sherry's going to be a speaker there. We're also having Travis Walton is going to be a speaker there.
Oh, good. Okay.
And, you know, in his story, you know, the book Fire in the Sky, and we just talked to him a few months ago. We were out in L.A., and he was dropped off in the wrong place, but said he knew it was done on purpose.
Right, right.
And he thinks he was picked up by accident. He wasn't supposed to be picked up.
Oh, I know. I have heard him say that. That's interesting, isn't it? I didn't think those guys made mistakes like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Well, he said
that would undermine my my understanding of the universe if they do.
Well, he was. Supposed to be there. He walked out into this beam, and he thinks
right.
that he thinks they took him on board to help him because he was
right.
really he was hurt.
Right, he being in that energy from the ship. Yeah,
yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he thinks they helped him, and then they put him back outside of town where he'd be safe, and he could get help, and he could get back into town.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, all of this is rational whenever you look at it without the fear involved.
Right, which is hard to do because it's like an ant trying to describe an elephant, you know.
Uh-huh.
You know, how can an ant describe an elephant? And they have such a limited perspective of it, and that's kind of what we're doing, trying to make sense of something in such a limited, dense vibration, and we have such a small view of it. So
I have limited perspective, but also limited concepts.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly.
So all we have is what we have, and we're trying mm-hmm. to. Yeah, that's excellent analogy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I was curious, Sherry. You made a comment earlier that a lot of your encounters are in the daytime.
Right.
That's not heard of that often.
I know.
It's
right,
isn't it?
Right. So what?
Yeah.
How would it happen, or what do you remember about that? And do you? I wonder why it was happening that way.
I believe that, I believe that a lot of the encounters were during the day because it's less frightening that way. I think there is twofold. I think it was because it was less frightening for me, and also because I've had so many encounters that it's almost like impossible to do them all at night. I've been very, very active with them, and my time on it, like if you were to add up all the hours, it's ridiculous how much time I've spent with them. And there were periods of time where I started to actually think of myself as living more in that world than in this one. And in the book, I even mentioned there was a psychic healer who I took my girlfriend to for a healing, and he came walking out of the room, and I was just sitting there waiting for my friend, and as he walked by, he just nodded at me and said hello, and then he stopped, and he backed up, and he looked at me, and he said, oh, my, you have a lot going on, don't you? And he said, do you know that you're barely here? He said, you barely have a toe in this reality. He said, you're more there than you are here. And so I think that the encounters during the day, they just were easier. They would pop in and take, you know, pick me up. As a child, we lived in a very isolated area, and it was easy for me to disappear for 1, 2, or 3 hours without my mother noticing that, because we were kept outside all day long, and they came a lot for me. a lot when I was a child. And on into my teen years, they came a lot of the times when I was at my friend Vicky's house. And they started shifting to nighttime encounters, you know, all nighttime and daytime. But some of the encounters were at night at her house. I would get up and leave the bed and walk out the door. And the ship was always over on the rise. So just it was a lot of activity. I've spent a lot of time with them. I believe it's because they really took good care of me. They really did. They my body was very well watched over by them. And they also wanted to keep my connection to them intact because it was not easy for me to be here. I was very homesick right from the get-go. I remember arguing that I didn't want to go back into that little bitty body. soon after I was born. It's a memory that I had. I didn't put it in the book. I didn't put everything in the book. I just didn't. But I have a memory of, and I never quite could make sense of it. I kept thinking, trying to make it that I was looking at my sister when she came along. She was born when I was 5. And I kept wanting to think it was her that I was imagining this about. But I remember standing by the crib with Da, who is the ET that I have always had my encounters with. He's always been there. And I remember standing there and not arguing, but just saying, I don't think I signed that. I didn't understand this was what it was going to be like. I don't want to go back into that body. It's not easy. It's very, very dense. And I remember, I didn't argue. But I know I had to be coached, and I had to be reminded that this is what, you know, you agreed to do this. Now, you know, you're doing it. And I think that they spent a lot of time with me in order to keep me in the higher vibration so that I wouldn't feel so out of place here, so that I wouldn't get so homesick that I might decide, you know, I've always been kind of a melancholy, not really sad or depressed, but just homesick my whole life.
Yeah, you don't know how many hundreds of people I've heard this same story from.
Oh, really?
Well, and I know we must have many, many listeners out there that oh, my goodness.
They're always emailing us, and they say, you're telling my story. Have you read my books, The Three Waves of Volunteers?
I read one of them, Dolores, when I first awakened to the fact that I was a volunteer, and I ran out and got it, and I just ate it right up, yes.
Because you're describing
stuff.
Yeah, you're describing.
Oh, really?
There.
Well,
yeah,
you know,
because they definitely don't want to be here, and they don't like it here, and it is very dense and heavy.
Yes. Yes.
And they get in here, but in there, see, a lot of the volunteers are ETs.
Right.
And so whenever they are coming, they're taking care of their own people, making sure they're safe here.
Right, right. And that's what I feel that I am. I mean, I always used to say this is my one and only time here. You know, I haven't been human before, I would say. And that's who I knew myself to be. But the reason I don't read a lot of books, I just wanted to just get that in there. I don't read other people's stories or listen to other things because I don't want it to taint my memories and what I say. So it's unusual for me to read, but I did read your book. But I don't read. I've heard Travis speak, but I haven't read his book. I just don't do that stuff because I don't want to have that stuff color my own experiences.
Well, that's the way me. I don't read other people's work because later they'll come out and say, "Well, you stole my material because they're so much alike."
Yeah.
So that's why I don't read other people's books except for research.
Right.
But
manuscripts.
Oh, yeah, I read the manuscripts that are submitted, but I think
that's other people's work.
Well, it is, yeah, but okay. All right. But
well, do you have what kind of memories do you have, like when you're taken, when you have the encounters, do you always go back to the ship or you know what happens?
Mm-hmm. It's always to the ship. There was an encounter that I had. I write about it in the book. I almost didn't put it in there because it's so personal, but it was a recent one in, I think it was in the winter of 2010 that I asked, 2010 or 2011, it's been just a short while ago, that I asked to be taken to see my hybrid children. And I don't know what triggered me to ask. Well, I'm estranged. You know, I have a rough relationship with my own children, two daughters. And there was something in me that just yearned for that kind of connection. And so I asked if I could have some time with my hybrid children. And they took me on that instance, they took me to some place, I don't know where. It was a beautiful site that was very green and lush, very much like the earth, but my sense was that it was not the earth, but it was just beautiful. And it looked like it had a house on it that looked a lot like an earth house, but it was kind of a big kind of a mansion type thing. And that was one of the times that they took me somewhere that was out different than the ship. And then once they took me, when I was a child, they took me below the over the Pacific Ocean and down around the Catalina Islands and down deep into the ocean and back into some cavern and way deep into the earth under the ocean. And I don't know what that was. That was some kind of a base. And that was just a beautiful, that was a beautiful, beautiful place. I did not want to leave there. I had dreams about that for the longest time. Just a beautiful
They say
place.
There are bases underneath.
Yeah, what did it look like?
I don't remember a lot of it. I remember that I loved it there. I remember we went through a series. Because there's windows, you know, and I was always allowed to watch out the windows sometimes. And we went down through the water, way deep. It was dark and black. And then we went into this, like, I guess I would call it like a cavern or something. And we went through some kind of like locks or something, but anyway, we came to an area where there, you know, there was no water in there. And when I came out of the ship, there was the colors in that place were so beautiful that they seemed like they were alive. I don't know how else to describe it. The colors, it was a vibration more, and it had like almost a sound to it. The colors were alive, and there was a blue that was there that I have never forgotten, and I yearned to see that blue color again. It's just beautiful. And there was a wide sweeping staircase, and I remember that I was invited and told that I could walk, I'd go up that staircase. And so I remember that part of it, but that's all the memory I have. But it's just spectacular. But otherwise the time is on the ships, and I've been on the motherships, as you know, the huge, huge, huge ships, and then I've been on the little scout ships, and then everything in between. And I have memories of being on a ship a lot of time spent with children. And that's one thing I didn't put in the book. I've had children. I had several children know me, and they know me, and they tell their parents. They know me that I read to them on the ship at night.
They know you here.
They know me here. It's the weirdest thing. They know me. I'll give one example because it'll be easier. Because I have like five different stories of this, but the one that was the most intriguing was someone that I worked with. I had a business relationship with him, and he had an autistic child. And this boy, I had never met him, but I had heard my friend talk about him, my business associate talk about him. And one day, this guy told me, he said, my son heard my wife give me the message. You know, you called the house for me, and my wife said, Sherry Wilde called for you. And he said, my son said, Sherry Wilde? Sherry Wilde called? And his son used, I think, a typewriter to communicate with. And he got all excited, and he typed out this message, and he said, my son said that he knows you, and he recognized your name. Yeah, and he recognized my name, which I thought, you know, I can't explain that because I don't know how that works. That he would recognize my name if I'm on the ship. But anyway, he recognized my name. And then my friend said, you don't know her. You've never met her. And he kept insisting he knew me. So then my friend said, well, describe what she looks like. And so he typed out what I looked like. And he said, well, okay, how do you know her? And then he said, she reads to me at night. And he said, how? And he said, when I go on the ship. And he said he'd been talking about that he's been going on some ship. He said at night he goes on a ship, and he said we didn't know what he's talking about. And and this guy said, you know what he's talking about? And I said, well, yeah, I do. And
yeah,
yeah.
Makes sense to us.
Yeah. Huh?
It makes sense to us.
Yeah.
But you know, there was one man told me when he was a little boy, he knew every night he would go somewhere where he went to school.
Yes,
be
me
teachers
too.
There. Yes. And he said there were other kids in the neighborhood that he knew also went.
Right.
And they would go when they were sleeping, and they'd all be on board.
Right.
Wherever they were in a classroom.
Right.
But the next day, he'd go up to these kids, and they didn't know what he was talking about.
Right.
So
right.
He remembered, but they didn't.
I did, too, as a child. I remembered being in the schools. I remember it all. I remember the teachers, what they looked like, what they were wearing. I remember all of that. Yeah,
uh-huh.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a common thread that goes through my family, actually. So, yeah, we do go to school, and we're multidimensional, you know. So there's an aspect of us that's doing that. You know, it gets really involved to try to explain it because it isn't always necessarily. Although my encounters were all physical up until recently, when it started to be more astral or on a more non-physical basis, but as a child and up until just a few years ago, my encounters were all physical. You know, I was leaving with, you know, in the body totally, and it was a physical experience. So now it appears that that's not always the case, and it's a little bit different. It's bizarre. That's the only way to put it. It's bizarre, and you know, I have someone that's a witness to it. My partner is witness to a lot of the things that happen at my house at night. And, you know, I mean, he's seen the ships. He's seen the guys in the room. He's heard me talking to them. He's seen me get out of bed. You know, I've been observed getting up, walking out the door, and disappearing.
But they don't take him, too?
He asked if he could meet them. And I had already asked Da if he could have an encounter, and Da said not now, he's not ready. But then 6 weeks, I think it was 6 weeks later or so many weeks later, he actually did get his encounter. They picked him up for about 20 minutes to half an hour, and it was
how did he do?
He did great. He has no fear. He has
wonderful.
No fear. Yeah, it's on my blog. It's on my blog if you want to read about it. It's really interesting. Yeah.
Because, you know, in many of the cases I've written about, they'd be sleeping together in a bed.
Mm-hmm.
And the one person is taken, like the woman, and she said her husband's laying right there, and she's trying to wake him up.
Yeah.
Says, don't you see them? Don't you see what's happening? And they can't wake him up. They sleep through everything.
Right. That's the way it was back in my early years. Yeah, my husband, he'd be dead to the world, or he'd be almost like passed out. He was in a stupor, you know. I mean, they put you in an altered state.
Yeah.
You just can't. You can't wake up. If they don't want you with, they take care of that business.
Yeah, it's a very personal thing is what it is.
Yes.
Well, can I go back on that? You were talking about when you asked to see your hybrid children. You just said you were taken to this other place, this mansion. So did you get to meet your children?
I did. I met, there were about, let me see if I can remember how many, there were about, was it about a dozen to 18 of them? I can't remember how many were there. They were, it was very emotional, and I've been told that I have, I think it's 42 hybrid children. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that I, on some level, I know them all, but this was on a more conscious level that I was able to have this time with them. And it was very emotional, very emotional. They're beautiful, beautiful. I was surprised at how old they were, some of them. But then I realized, you know, they've been taking my ova since I was, 17 years old for sure. And so,
that's what I was going to say, if you knew how it happened, because you're right. They do take the eggs and they take the sperms and different ones. And these are all being created for a reason, and it's a positive reason.
Right.
So many people think that's supposed to be bad and negative with the hybrids. But this is part of what the so-called abductions was about.
Right. It was part of my program that I signed on for when I came here. I remember agreeing. My program was a two-part program, and it was to assist with Gaia during the ascension process, which we're in now. But the early part of my job was to be a participant in the hybrid program. And so I have these 42 beings, and You know, anyone who thinks that that's a bad thing, you meet these people, and they are just amazing, light-filled, beautiful, loving creatures. Just, there can't be anything evil about that. They're just wonderful, amazing. So,
well,
no.
What did they look like?
You know, they all were very normal, for the most part, human-looking, except for there was one gal there who had more of the ET DNA in her. But she was just a beautiful, light-filled being, but she definitely had more of the ET DNA. And I'm not sure what that was about. The rest were all, they could walk down the street, and the only thing you'd notice about them is that they just have a, if you can read vibration or if it can sense the light reading in another being, you would notice that they all were of a high vibration. So,
okay, because I've heard that some of them do look different,
uh-huh.
Like there is a mixture there.
Right. Right, like, well, but see, I can, like, I meet people now. I've done several times I've met, and I'll give another, I've got several examples of that. Well, I'll give one example which I thought was kind of interesting. It was, I was in Costa Rica and met with some people down there, just looking at, I was thinking, I had, had an urge to leave USA for a while. And I went down there and I was looking at a place to live and considering it. And, had lunch with a group of the people who were already living down there, and there was a young man sitting at the far end of the table, too far away for me to talk to, but I looked at him, and after the lunch was over, I got up and started to walk back toward my car, and he came over, and he said, Sherry, I want to just say hello to you. And I turned, and I looked at him, and I recognized him. You know, I recognized him energetically, you know, and I shook his hand, and he shook my hand, and he said, oh, right. He said, there it is. And, you know, and I knew what he was talking about. You could feel the energy. And he looked at me, and he said, so I know you, right? And I said, yes, you do. And I said, and I know you. And he said, we need to talk. And he said, you know where I know you from, right? And I said, yeah, I know where I know you from. You know, so it's, I meet these kids. I call them kids. There's a lot of them who are in their mid to late 30s and early 40s, and they're Pleiadians, you know, and I can read their energy stamp, and, you know, and I can recognize them very easily, and so I don't know if you call, I don't guess you'd call them hybrids, but they certainly have brought some of that DNA with them, because I see it in their eyes when I look at them, but it's,
Sherry,
it's
we call
a subtle
them
thing. You call them what?
The second wave.
Okay.
Because in the book, the three waves of volunteers, those are
yeah,
the ones.
And they do. They have this energy that you just know.
Oh, okay. Good to know. Because I see them all over the place, and I just love them because they're such loving beings.
Thousands of them.
Yeah.
We travel all over the world, and we're running into these everywhere.
Wonderful.
And they have that energy that really it's here to save the earth.
Yes.
That's how powerful the energy is.
But
and
I was getting the feeling when you were talking about the hybrid children, I was going to ask you, do you think some of them are here? Because it's coming through as a very real feeling, like they have their foot in the door here, just like, you know, like we have these multiple dimensions and everything. I feel like they're here, and I'm wondering if you know that.
My sense is that those children, those or the adults now, that they are not, that that the world is, that this earth is not of a good fit for them. Their vibration is actually a little bit higher than that. And so they may come onto the planet, I believe they may come onto the planet after we finish moving into the fifth dimension totally, and after we've gone through what we need to go through to get there. Maybe that's the purpose of it. That's kind of a sense of knowing that I have. Right now, they're just busy living their own lives on their own world, wherever that might be. Maybe it's on the ship. I think some of them are on the ship, but I think most of these beings were living on whatever planet this was that I was taken to.
Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal.
That's what I've written about. A lot of them are being, mm-hmm.
they're prepared
for another planet.
Right.
Yeah.
Really? That's so interesting. See, I love it when I get validation. That's always good. Yeah.
Now, I mean, that's why I wanted to publish the book, because everything in it goes along totally with what I found.
Yeah, it's taken me a while to learn to trust the information that I got or that I have. The remembering that I'm going through, it started happening around 2009, I guess, is when I started to really, when the recession hit and I didn't have a business to run anymore, it opened up all this time for me, and all of a sudden I started to remember all this about my, and start to have more activity again. Something that really shocked me. As a matter of fact, I do write that in the book when Da showed up, you know, in my bedroom one night, and I mean, I really was pretty calm, and I said, "What are you doing back here? You know, I'm past menopause. You know, you shouldn't be messing with me anymore." And he was like insulted. He's like, "What? You don't remember about the Earth changes? We told you about that. That's what all your training was about. There's work to be done." And I was like, "Oh man,
just thought you were done."
Yeah. Oh no, that's what they keep saying. Oh no, you're just starting.
I know it. That's what he's like. There's work to be done. And I was like, "What?" Yeah. So it's been really interesting. It's been very interesting.
Well, let's hear what you have to say on that, because we're always talking about the changes and the shifts and everything. So it'd be really good to hear that. That's probably what this caller is going to ask.
Yeah, because, you know, we give lectures everywhere, and that's the main thing we lecture on is what's going to happen. You want to take the caller first?
Yeah, let's take the caller and see if that's maybe part of what they're asking.
Okay, and then we'll get on to that. Okay, caller, who's there?
My name's Alice. I'm calling from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Hi. How are you this evening?
Hi. How's everybody doing today?
Okay.
Very good.
What's your question?
Okay. My question is this. I'm doing some research, and I'm trying to get as much research as I possibly can, because I'm really interested in anybody that was born in the call. Do you know what that is?
The born in the what?
In the call?
Oh,
the
you
call,
mean, oh,
C-A-U-L.
I know, call, you mean with the, what they call the veil? On the face, you mean, when they're born?
Yes.
Yes. That's an old wives' tale, you know.
I was just wondering if...
With the... Yeah, that's what they used to call the old wives' tale. If they're born with part of the membrane is over their face, they said they're born with the veil and they're supposed to be very psychic. But that's old wife's tale, but who knows if it's real or not. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Well, that would just go back to people that are psychic, really.
Right.
I don't know how many of them even know if they're born in hospitals. Nobody's going to say, you know.
Mhm. Well, you have to tell the hospital that you want to know.
Because you know when you're having a baby, they're too busy; they don't even pay attention.
Well, if there's a family history of it, sometimes it runs in families.
Yeah.
It's like 1 in 8,000 births that it happens to.
Yeah.
I was just doing some investigational stuff on that. I'm asking a lot of people about it. Not too many people know about it. I read back far in the history of it, and it goes all the way back to where maybe in Caesar's time, where if you were born in that manner, such as a call, they automatically considered you to be a ruler, a king.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's very old. They call it a wives' tale. We live here in the country in Arkansas, and those are the kind of things that they pass down through their belief systems. But I don't know. I think it'd be hard to find somebody. They'd have to know.
Well,
but I think you're just referring really to people who are psychic. I don't think it matters if they're born with a veil or not, you know. Well, anyway.
Okay, now I have another question for you.
But I respect research because I love it, and to whatever sparks your interest, pursue it. You know, okay, go ahead.
Well, I've been really pursuing it lately, only because my mother was born of a call, and she told me that I was born of a call.
Okay.
And when I was a very, very young girl, I had an awful lot of out-of-body experiences and psychic experiences, and I could look at nature, and I felt like nature could speak to me and tell me things.
Okay.
And
that doesn't shock me, but I hear this all the time. Well, what's your other question?
Yeah. My other question is, with these extraterrestrial beings out there, is it possible that they can come to Earth and kind of like being like a hidden thing and appear to you as nature?
Oh, yes. They are very good at that, of appearing as something that you don't know what it is. They love to appear as animals, you know?
Okay.
Jerry, you heard of that, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, I've experienced it, yeah, yeah. As a matter of fact, yeah, my mother and my partner and myself. I mean, you think you're seeing an owl or a deer or a dog. I mean, all kinds of things, yes, definitely. And all you remember are, you know, the eye. The difference is always the eyes are so striking. But, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, because I've written about that in many of my books. That I call it an overlay because it's done so that the person won't be afraid.
Right.
They appear to the person as an animal.
Right.
And, well, the animal is not acting like an animal should act, you know, afraid or anything. But there's many people have seen that. And then whenever I do my work with the hypnosis, we find out it was a overlay. And it was actually just to appear to them so they won't be afraid. So this is very common, yes. Well, we're only going to have
a few more minutes here. With you.
What?
I was in New Jersey sitting on the beach one summer, not too long ago, just a couple years ago. And this is just one of my experiences that I have. And it's not anything I control. It just happens. And all of a sudden, 25 butterflies just came out of nowhere and just landed all over my body. And I had this overwhelming feeling that they were there to have a conversation with me.
Oh, yeah.
And I got scared. And I looked over at my shoulder because I had taken my hand and I was trying to brush them off my legs and my chest and my arms, and they would fly off and come back, and one stayed there, didn't move. And I didn't want to hurt them because I knew if I touched the butterfly, I would remove the powder and it couldn't fly. And I didn't want to do that. And then something inside of me said, they're here for a reason. Pay attention. Don't run from them. And I looked at the one butterfly, which was sitting on my left arm, close to my shoulder, and I looked at it, and the sucker looked at me. We were eyeball to eyeball. And it said to me, we are here. We are here to take. We are here to take them. We want you to know we're here. And I got fearful, so I jumped up and I ran in the water.
Oh, that made him leave. Okay. Well, we're running out of time, but
yeah, my mother
this to me is very natural because I know it's real. They're trying to make you aware. You have to open up your psychic abilities to be able to communicate.
Sounds like he's doing it. That's
Well, I did open up my psychic abilities. The thing was, I knew they were there telling me they were going to take something, and I didn't want to give it, and I looked at my mother. And I thought it was her.
Oh,
and I got this big lump in my throat. And she said to me, oh, my God, Alice, I've never seen anything like that. And I said, Mom, this is not good. This is not good. And they came back. And I went back into the water, and I wouldn't come out of the water until they just flew right on down the beach. And
see, that's the human fear.
I went home that night, and when I got up the next morning, my son was dead. It wasn't my mother.
Son.
It was my son. I knew that darn butterfly looked at me straight in the face and said, we are here.
I thought she submitted her phone.
And I thought they were telling me they were here to take my mother because she was elderly. And the next morning when I got up, it was my son. He was gone. He died like 6 o'clock in the morning.
I think they trying to give you... left a message that something was going to happen because they didn't take him.
Right.
They're just trying to give
you a... Well, that's what they said. That's what I thought. But anyway, like 2 years later, my mother passed. And I was riding down the street, and all of a sudden there was like this big rainbow in the sky, and the clouds opened. It was a rainy day, and the sun broke through, and it was really pretty. And I looked up at the sky, and then I heard say to me, and it wasn't like a voice from outside, it was a voice from within me. And it said, we were here for both of them that day, but we decided to leave your mother to help you through with your son.
Okay.
And well, I that thought, makes oh sense. My God.
Okay, but, I want to thank you for calling, because we're going to have to go off the air here. But thank you for calling.
Oh.
But everything you say makes perfect sense. Okay, and thank you. And Sherry, we're going to have to sign off. And we'll be seeing you.
We're all being left in suspense about what she knows.
I know. We were just going to get on my favorite subject.
I know.
Well, we could continue next week. We don't have anyone scheduled for next week.
Yeah, I think I can do that. Wait a minute. I'd have to check. I have to check first. I'm doing something on the Ozark Mountain thing. Was that? No, that's the 31st.
31st, yeah.
Okay, so, yeah.
Okay, because
Otherwise, we can say, come to the conference and see what you have to say.
Okay, because we're going to have to going to sign off, or he's going to pull the plug. He does that. We'll pull the plug.
Let's see if we can continue this, then.
Okay, then maybe we can. But anyway, thanks, Sherry, for coming on tonight. It's been very interesting.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it very much. It went fast.
It did. A whole hour went fast.
It went very fast, but thank you.
Thanks to our callers for calling in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and I want to thank everybody for listening tonight. So good night, everybody.
Make it great.